Hey everybody, the holidays are here and YKWD with our Riotcast family are doing a gift drive for the first time. Gifts donated from you will go to two different groups of kids, NAC in New York and Alliance House in Massachusetts. And our good friends at Tweaked Audio really stepped up. They're offering a 33% off promo and will match every set of earbuds for everyone sold. So go to tweakedaudio.com and use promo code YKWDGIFT when checking out. And this offer only lasts till December 15th. For more info on the gift drive and donating gifts, go to riotcast.com. There's a page set up with details on NAC and Alliance House, along with a wish list and where to send the gifts. So please help us make this Christmas a little brighter for these kids. Thanks so much. And happy holidays from the YKWD podcast and the Riotcast family.
You're listening to Bandgeek with Richie Castellano on the Riotcast Network. Riotcast.com.
Hey, Richie here. This is Band Geek episode 27 with Rocco Monteroso. Rocco is a master guitar repairman who works at the world-famous store Mandolin Brothers, which is located right here in Staten Island. But aside from that, Rocco also happens to be one of my favorite guitar players, so it's a big thrill for me to get to play with him. He also picked some incredibly challenging songs, so we were all sweating it a little bit this week. But I think it came out okay, and I hope you like it. Before we get started, let's take care of a little business. If you're doing your holiday shopping on Amazon, before you do that, please visit our Amazon link at www.riotcast.com/bandgeek. You go to the top of the page, and you'll see a banner that says Amazon. Click that first before you shop, and it'll bring you to your regular Amazon page. But the only difference is a small percentage of your purchases will go to support the show, and it doesn't cost you anything extra, and it's a huge help to us, so we really appreciate that. Also, we appreciate when you go to iTunes and subscribe to the show, rate, and comment. All that stuff is incredibly helpful, and thank you for doing it. So with that said, let's get into it. Enjoy the show with Rocco Monteroso.
Now I can take my pants off.
You can.
Hey, what's that buzz?
Speaking of which, welcome to Band Geek. I'm Richie Castellano, and with me today is, this is interesting. With me today is my wife, Anne-Marie Castellano, on vocals and keyboard.
Hi.
Danny Miranda on bass and vocals.
Hi.
In the back, we have a two-person cheering section. We have Party Crashers. Andy and Brandy crashed our podcast.
Woo, woo, yeah. Woo!
Andy wasn't supposed to be here today, but because he played a gig at, where was it?
Arlene's Grocery.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was good.
It was a great gig.
I played Arlene's Grocery last night.
Returning is...
Played it last year.
You did it with the band, the house band?
No, I did it with No More Tears. I'm sorry, Rich. We should.
Oh, it's okay. No, it's
sorry. We're taking over here. Okay,
you can take over. It's fine. This is
the ADD podcast.
Returning was our last special guest, Dennis Lieflang, who is helping us out on drums today. Thank you for coming, Dennis.
Hello, my pleasure.
Andy booked, I called Andy last week. I said, Andy, hey, can we do a podcast on Tuesday? He goes, yeah, no problem. Then he calls me up a couple days ago. Oh, yeah, I can't do that. I have to play Arlene's Grocery. So Dennis,
anyway.
Yeah, so Dennis, nice. Dennis rescued us, stepped in. I mean, now Andy's here anyway, so it's kind of awkward, but whatever.
Been there, done that.
We're going to have a drum battle later.
We're going to have a drum off. Who can break my rickety fucking electronic drum kit first?
Dennis, you came down to make sure you were doing it right. That's all.
The answer is me. I break everything.
And the melodious voice you're hearing is our special guest for today, Rocco Monteroso.
Thank you very much.
It's fun to
Now, Rocco, if you don't know Rocco, Rocco is a very interesting guy, and he has a lot of interesting things that he does. Rocco, I would say most of the time, is the head of the repairs department at the world-famous guitar store Mandolin Brothers. What's your title there?
Repair shop manager, tech.
But the thing is, when you talk about Mandolin Luthier. Brothers, you're not talking about just a guy who does setups and a guy who changes your strings, like you see in most guitar stores. This is a guy who has to restore, 100-year-old instruments and recut pick guards and rebind priceless instruments. And so it goes beyond that. This is not a regular guitar repairman. This is someone who has a master craft.
For important people too.
Yeah, and not only does he do this, celebrities and rock stars all throughout the world know to bring their guitar to Rocco when the shit goes down. So
that's a lot of pressure.
I mean, Mandolin Brothers. That's that when McCartney's bass needed a fret job, right? That's where they brought it.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't there at the time, but I came in about maybe a year later.
I just remember going to Mandolin Brothers once, and I think was Flip there at the time, probably.
Yeah that's who did
Flip Scipio. He was there, and he was running the job that Rocco has now. And I went to go visit him, and he showed me a picture of Paul McCartney's bass. I'm like, yeah, that's Paul McCartney's bass. He goes, no, look where it is. I'm like, oh, it's here. You had it here? He goes, yeah. And supposedly McCartney sent a bodyguard with the bass. As the legend goes.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, his assistant, I guess, or however you want to put it. Yeah, he flew it in.
He's packing.
And the Concorde, I believe.
Ooh.
Yeah.
He was probably packing, too.
Oh, wow.
Packing something, yeah.
And actually...
and he probably had a gun.
You weren't getting your hands on that bass,
yeah,
that's
no.
for sure.
We should mention this. The owner and founder of Mandolin Brothers, Stan Jay, recently passed away, and he was a wonderful guy. So let's dedicate this podcast to him and his memory.
Absolutely.
And so Stan, definitely was the guitar guy to the stars, you know what I mean? He was a really nice guy. I remember being a kid and going to his store, and he would bring me up to the secret room where he had all the good stuff, right. And he showed me the D'Angelico Finn guitar.
Oh, okay.
With which is, I think, Scott Chinnery owns now, or owner, yeah. He died, right, too?
Right, he died.
Everybody's fucking died.
Yeah, everybody's
Yeah, so Scott, it was this D'Angelico like jazz box, but the guy that D'Angelico built it for was a fan of classic cars, like the 50s Chevys. So he put a Finn on the actual guitar, if you can imagine that.
That's right.
You can look it up. It's like D'Angelico Finn guitar. But enough about that. Rocco is also a tremendous guitar player.
Yes. Physically, he means.
Not only his dimensions, but his skill.
Thank you.
He's big in Japan.
Somebody, you know what? All of us are big
in
Japan.
Yeah.
That's a story I'll get into later. But
no, I am a size extra large in Japan.
No.
My fingers have muscles, but that's about it. I guess that's really the only thing that gets a good workout.
Six pack on your palm.
I went to Japan on vacation, and Anne-Marie, who's tiny, she went clothes shopping, and she found this like leather jacket thing that she really liked, and she goes, guess what size I am in Japan? And I said, what? She goes, size fat. She goes, it says size fat on it.
What?
Yep.
The Japanese don't pull punches. They're like, you're fucking fat.
I have the smallest feet out of everybody I know, too. I wear a size 6 women's, which is tiny. And I wore a large shoe over there. Large.
I actually found the pair of shoes there that I bought. I have a size, I was probably 8.5. But I found it.
What size were you over there?
Whatever, it was like the largest shoe I could find.
Yeah. It was sumo sized. That's what it said.
And it was very difficult to find.
It came with a piece of celery.
Yeah, probably.
So, in other words, Rocco won't find shoes in Japan.
Oh, no, man. No, but I'll definitely find a lot of fat.
Maybe in the marina.
Wear in Japan, that's for sure.
It's very depressing for the ego. It's like, I'm feeling pretty good. I've been walking, try every pair of jeans on in the store, like, go fucking home.
That's why people come to America.
That's right.
And have another California roll.
But you know, it's fine.
That's what I decided to do when I went to Japan.
Dumpling motherfucker.
You know, I don't think I really see a lot of fat Japanese people.
Yeah, sumo wrestlers.
I mean, yeah, but sumo wrestlers aren't even fat.
Well,
just,
they were onto something
they are,
with that tag.
They're stuck in those little fucking hotel
rooms. They were onto something because they gave up shopping for clothes.
I love the turn this conversation has taken.
It's awesome.
That's absolutely nothing to do with
anything. Maybe they're stuck
in
the drawers. You know that Kramer had? He had them sleeping in the... That's stuck in the fucking dress.
What is happening?
Now, I say Rocco's a phenomenal guitar player, and years ago, somebody, you know, these things on social media, they say, oh, list your top 10 favorite guitar players. And no shit, I always put Rocco on my top 10 list. And I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. I really do feel that way. Sure. You're one of the most inspiring guys I watch play. And every time I watch you, I say, can you show me a lick, man?
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
And I know I annoy you when I say that.
No, you don't. But, I'm really humbled by that. Thank you.
Yeah,
you know, Rock, especially coming from you because honestly, I mean, you're a phenomenal guitar player.
I suck. Rocco's
you
fucking awesome.
You don't suck, man. Jesus Christ.
But no, Rocco rips, and we're gonna get into it soon with Rocco. We're gonna
have it out.
We're gonna rip ass. I mean, we're gonna rip guitar solos together. Anyway,
okay. Don't let us stand in the way.
I'll make room. That
you're
couch
in a very dangerous
enough.
Seat right now, Danny.
No, you got to get through me. This is what scares me.
Now, Rocco has played in a few bands with Dennis here.
Yes.
You guys were in that Maiden band together,
yes.
The Maiden New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how long have you guys played?
I'd say that was, what, 90?
No, that started, well.
Oh, 2000, sorry. 2000,
late 2004, I think. Early 2005, maybe.
Yeah.
I did that for about 7 years, eight, maybe seven,
roughly. Yeah, I think something like that.
That was a great band. But I remember seeing Rocco play when I was 14. My dad took me to a bar. He goes, "You want to go see Rocco play?" I was like, "Yeah, sure." And I saw his band. They were like a arena rock band. And I remember the songs you did.
Yeah.
You did "Carry On, Wayward Son," "Run Like Hell." Fat Bottom Girls. That's what I remember from that evening. And I just remember saying, oh my God, this is the blueprint. And I remember I based like my band off what I saw Rocco doing. I was like, no one does these songs. It was the 90s. Everybody was playing Pearl Jam and Nirvana. And you did all these like amazing arena rock songs. And you guys were singing three-part harmony. And you had a keyboard player. Yeah. Who has a keyboard player? So it blew my mind. And that really, you know, like I said, was the blueprint for what I tried to do when I put together a band. I said, no, we're not going to do any of that horse shit. We're going to do, you know, the stuff that you got to pay attention to play. And yeah, that's around the time I needed a keyboard player. So I tricked Andy into playing rock music. Remember Andy? Andy was you had a keyboard player. I didn't have anybody. So sure. I took a guy from the jazz class in school. I said, okay. I said, this is Keith Emerson. Okay. But so then, now fast forwarding, I'm jumping around a bit. I've always seen Rocco in a few different bands. And then most recently, I've seen Rocco play with Dennis in Bumblefoot, which is Ron Thal's band.
Yep.
And that was awesome. I got to see you guys at the Starland Ballroom with Gary Hoey and Yngwie. And I want to ask you about that right now. Because just from me and you talking, Rocco, I know that you're a huge fucking Yngwie fan.
Yeah, I definitely. Well, I guess I was more of an Yngwie fan when I was younger.
Before you met him, is that what you said?
Well, you know, he was a nice guy. I mean, he was. I can't say anything bad.
What's that?
He played great.
What's that like when you have to? Because you know, there's a lot of. I mean, forgive me if I'm wrong, but there's a lot of that neoclassical influence in what I hear you do. What's that like to have to play on stage with a guy like that, with one of your dudes? You know what I mean?
Well, luckily I didn't have to do any soloing, so
yeah.
So it wasn't too bad. I left all that, you know, or Ron pretty much took the helm on that one. But
Rocco was overqualified for the job.
Yeah, well, thanks. But it was surreal at times, you know, seeing Yngwie play, because I mean, I've seen him play live when I was younger,
mm-hmm.
you know, back in the 80s and the 90s, you know, a bunch of times. But being on the same stage with him, even though we didn't get a lot of stage to actually play, because he had about a gazillion marshals.
Let me paint a picture.
Never a bad thing.
Let me paint the picture of the show
yeah.
for the listeners. The most bands, when you play, You put the drummer in the middle on a riser, and you flank the drummer with maybe a bass player and a rhythm guitar player or a keyboard player, and then the soloist stands in the middle, right? When I saw Yngwie at the Starland Ballroom, there was a wall of marshals, probably, what, 28 bottoms maybe, or something like that?
We counted. I think it was like 38.
38 bottoms.
No, I swear I'm not kidding.
Each stack had like four heads on it,
yep,
right? Yeah. And not only was it the back, but it also curved around like an L shape, so he was encased in a wall,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
And
yeah,
the band wasn't on stage. They were in the corner like they were on a timeout.
Yeah.
And the band...
There was one guy on the floor. There was seriously a dude.
Oh yeah,
on the
bass player. Like every time Yngwie would flash like a dirty look at the bass player, he had to go stand off the stage for a little bit and then take a time out. And the drummer was like squished in the corner, and the keyboard player stood in front of the drummer so you couldn't see him.
Trembling.
And the bass player had to like kind of. It's like
yeah,
sorry.
It was like Yngwie against the band.
Yeah, you have nowhere to stand.
Well, and you know what was the best part was that. None of those cabs and heads were dummies.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah, they weren't all plugged in, but they were all functioning, loaded.
Well, wait.
Heavy.
Functioning.
Well, some were beat up.
They all lit up. Yeah. But the funny thing was he only used, I think, two heads and two cabs.
Yeah.
Out of 38.
Well,
that's like,
and his poor tech had to open him up to fix the little light on the switch if it wasn't working.
But
had to open
up the whole
head.
Yeah. Funny thing was on the tour, there were a couple of venues where guys were scrambling to get more electricity.
Yeah, because, I was just gonna say.
Yeah, because what happened was he left all his heads on. Now again. These weren't dummy heads, meaning, you know.
They're drawing 150 watts each or 100
exactly.
watts.
Exactly. They all had transformers, and even though they may not have been plugged into cabs, they're still drawing a lot of current. So what wound up happening was they were running, like, extension cords out into, like, the hallways. And right? I mean,
Sounds like a wedding that I played.
But, you know, the best part was when we played a smaller club, he still insisted on putting every single cab on stage. So yeah. there were stages where we didn't fit.
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing that I went to go see Yngwie with my cousin Phil, who is my tech.
Okay.
And I was like, I want you to watch Yngwie's tech, right? Yngwie has a little pick holder on his stand,
Kenny,
that holds four picks.
We love Kenny.
Right? And he throws out four picks about every 45 seconds, and the guy, like he's running in a pit crew, has to keep running out and put it in. And Yngwie's yelling at the guy and doing dirty looks. I said,
and
that's
throwing
Yngwie's,
his
that's,
guitar in the air at him, yeah. And the guy's expected to catch it. He tosses it in the air like lobs
but
it to him.
No one's there. It became a thing because Kenny is his name, his tag. He would fill up the whole thing with like 15 picks, and Yngwie would walk up and pick one out, and all of them would drop on the floor. And then he would come scrambling and put them back in, like on his knees.
Well, before I knew his name was Kenny, I was sitting there with my cousin Phil. I said, "You know who that is? That's Philve Malmsteen. That's Yngwie's cousin."
Nice.
And look at him fucking up right there. All right, I don't want to see you do that with me. And he's like, "You don't throw out picks ever." I was like, "That's because they're expensive."
You gave me about 100 of them last.
Oh no, those are. You got really mad at me. No, here. Danny.
I took all of them.
Here's what
they
happened.
If they were worth anything, I'd sell them on eBay.
I have another tech named Andrew, who's a bit of a joker. And Danny was doing a run of gigs with us. And on the last gig, I had these picks that I didn't get. Buck Dharma, someone said, "Hey, you want picks?" And he goes, "Sure." And he gave us like these generic picks for the whole band. I mean, I use a Dunlop Gator Grip 2.0, which are kind of expensive. But these were like generic, like, you know.
The ones I loved.
Yeah, like the regular like plastic, what do they call those?
They look like tortoise shells.
Yeah.
Not the tortoise ones, the other ones, like the
acetone?
Pearl?
Like probably that. Like the real
they were pearl,
flimsy plastic ones.
Okay. They definitely weren't Delrin or...
Right. So anyway, so they gave me like 100, or like 400 of them that say Richie Castellano with the thing. I don't play them. That's not the thickness I use.
Yeah.
So but we have them. So the last day, because I don't use them, Andrew took Danny's mic stand and put about 200 Richie Castellano picks all over Danny's mic stand. And he goes, "What the fuck is this?" And he starts yelling. And then he goes, "I got your pick." I go, "That's not my pick." He goes, "What do you mean?" I goes, "Those are just the throwaway picks." He goes, "Who are you, fucking Paul Stanley?"
No. He said, "Oh, I don't use those
picks. That's a good segue.
I give them out to the fans."
That's not what I said.
That is exactly what you said.
Oh, God.
And you said it to me. You don't ever want to say that kind of thing to me.
No, I think I only said that to you because I wanted to get a rise out of you.
Oh, you did.
But you took all of them.
I was picking them up. I give them.
But Yngwie, instead of having 100 picks on his stand, he had 4. And the guy had to keep going. And
Yngwie, didn't start out that way, but yeah.
The pick holder got smaller and smaller and smaller as the tour went on. But the guy would run out, and I would see him so nervous trying to put the picks back, and I felt horrible.
Oh, shit, wait. Yeah.
I know my stomach hurt like watching him.
I have one in my pocket.
There you go.
I have one in I give these out to the fans. When I go across the Verrazano Bridge, instead of paying a toll, I give them 300 Richie Castellano
picks.
See that, ladies and gentlemen?
Okay, Danny, I'm going to take a picture of that, put it on the Band Geek website.
Matt, we start the auction at $350.
Oh, God.
That's great. Do you grab like a whole handful and just like whiz it at the guy as you pass the toll?
Somewhere in my home.
Make it sting a little, you know?
That's and hot. Whenever I take one out of my pocket, I'll go, fuck, what is this still doing here?
So do you have any Yngwie stories? Like, did you have any encounters with him? Because I know it's a big deal when you get to hang with someone like that.
Man, you know, the funny thing is, I don't have a lot of stories with Yngwie because honestly, I didn't really interact with the guy that much. Mm. You know, a couple of, hey, Yngwie and that kind of thing. But he was kind of just focused on getting on stage and doing a 3.5-hour sound check and,
That's conservative.
Is he in Blue Oyster?
Am I being conservative? And that was basically it. But, he definitely always knew what he wanted, and he got up, he did his thing, and
it was a great show. And that was a show that was a real treat for me because obviously Ron's a big inspiration to me. I can't say he's an influence because I can't play anything like him, but he's an inspiration to me. Yeah. Gary Hoey, I've been listening to since I'm a little kid, and Yngwie, I got into because of you, Rocco. Because I remember, there was like a demo you had for a band. It was a cover band you had. I think it was called Liquid V.
Okay.
You guys did. I'm a Rocco fan. I don't know if you can tell, but I am.
All right.
Thanks. I know all the shit.
You want to sit here?
So Liquid V had a demo online, and you guys did Crawling in the Dark by Incubus.
Oh, my God.
Right? By Hoobastank.
Hoobastank.
Same fucking band.
The stank of Hoobastank.
And there was a lick in there. There was like a break, and this was during the 90s, early 2000s, when there were no guitar solos.
That's new metal.
And I kind of got sick of it.
And Rocco
put one in.
And Rocco did this in the middle. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? And I go, please show me that. He goes, oh, that's just an Yngwie lick. I'm like, there's a guy who has licks that just sound like that. And that's when I got into it. And I started watching all like these instructional videos. And I said, oh, wow, this is like guitar playing for fat guys. It's like, it's very little, effort and maximum results. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like
not a lot of finger stretching. And it's good. It's good for the fat guys.
It's like the extra value meal of guitar playing.
Yes.
Can you
get as much as you can without actually moving your fingers?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, I'm going to put you on the spot. Can you teach us a lick right now? I told you I was going to ask you this.
Oh, I disconnected, I think.
Here's my guitar.
If you need a pick, I got one.
Can I have one of those Richie picks?
Do you want the real ones or the ones I give to the fans? The real ones are too expensive.
I didn't even prep one up. I hate being put on the spot. I'll think about one. Maybe I'll do one in a little bit.
So another thing that's interesting. Actually, you know what? Yeah. While we're in the mode of playing, let's do a song. The first song we're going to do today. Now Rocco selected some songs, and he selected a couple of doozies. And I got panicked text messages all week from people saying, "Why are we doing these fucking songs? They're too hard." So we're gonna do one right now. We're gonna play Kill the King by Rainbow, which, to be fair, Anne-Marie and I already know because we used to do it in our metal band. Kill the King, let's, what can we show from this? Let's talk about the intro harmonies. Let's do that.
Yeah.
A good guitar harmony.
Yeah, this is a good one. This is a good thing to teach. What are you playing in the intro there? The doing diggity diggity diggity. So that's actually like, this is funny because it's all relevant. That's something that Yngwie would play because that's a Ritchie Blackmore thing.
Absolutely.
And yeah. Yngwie takes a lot of his style from Ritchie Blackmore. So there's like a sort of rock and roll lineage you can trace through all the way up to me.
Those 3.5 hour sound checks was only Blackmore stuff.
Really?
He was playing with his band. Yeah, only Rainbow and Deep Purple. And
oh my God, did they do Since You've
Been
Gone?
I'd like to see that.
Yeah, they played that.
Really?
That sound check, sure. Yeah.
Well, Rudy Sarzo, who was in Blue Oyster Cult for a while, he was in Yngwie's band, and he told me all he would do on the tour bus is he would watch Ritchie Blackmore videos. That's all he would do.
I believe it.
That's believable.
Yeah. So you're playing, right? So that's a G minor arpeggio.
Yep.
And that's a two string thing. Now,
it's funny, but Ritchie didn't play it like that, though. Ritchie played it. He played it more of a an accord pattern. So he did.
Really?
Yeah. I seen the video of Rainbow doing it live, and I was watching him. I was like, wow, it seemed so much harder than it needed to be.
Absolutely.
And I'm not gonna play like that because I don't want to make my life difficult. It goes against the fat man grain. You know?
That's not supersizing your licks.
You know, you're not getting the optimal amount of playing of doing nothing.
Try playing that in Japan.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
don't burn any
calories. That's why I'll probably never play in Japan because I just don't want anybody to call me fat every other minute. Yeah. So
Yngwie would play it sort of like a hybrid pick, something like that.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Well, Ritchie played it. Like
oh,
that.
Sorry, Ritchie. Yeah. Yngwie doesn't play it. So.
And Yngwie, I don't think I've ever seen Yngwie play it, but I imagine you probably play it more like the traditional.
Yeah. Yeah. So the way we're playing it, and so sometimes I like teaching things the wrong way. So here's the way we're playing it. First, on the first string, we're pulling off from the 10th fret to the 6th fret, and that's D to B flat. And then we're playing the G on the B string on the 8th fret. Now, the Yngwie way of playing this. Now, a lot of people ask me, and this is a cool thing to do, is like, how do you sweep? Well, this is the beginning of that. You know, the two-string arpeggio is how you get up to that. Now, I've watched several Yngwie videos where he does this, and the way I learned from him on the video was that this is all downstrokes. So it's down, pull off, down, like and another down, like a sweep.
Yeah.
And,
double down.
And the palm muting is what gives it that thump. And that's the sound you want.
Yeah.
I'm playing the third below that. So now the problem is with my part is I don't know if this was a guitar part. This might have been a keyboard part in the record.
Probably, yeah.
So it's easier to play on a keyboard because if I stay on the first two strings also, I have a really nasty stretch. And when I go, because it doesn't stay on the G minor. After three times, it goes to the F. F major, and that's a wicked stretch up there. So I, instead of doing that, I also use my my fat guy skills, and I go up to the 12th fret, and I'm going, and I'm doing it on the D and G strings because the frets are closer together there.
Right.
That's the only reason I'm doing it over there. I could do it on the B and G strings, but the shape is weird. So I've and it doesn't because on guitar. It's tuned in fourths until you get to the G and the B string and when it's tuned into a major third, and that fucks up all of our cool shapes. So anytime you're learning a nice pattern or something that's really symmetrical, you get to that G and B and you go, and that screws you up all
Absolutely.
The time. So I'm doing it down there. We have a few little variations, and but that's the main thing. We do it in three different keys, or two different keys. We do it in G, then we do it in A, and there's a bunch of little changes that are really difficult to hear on the record, so Rocco's just going to take off a little bit on that part, and we're going to have a lot of fun going back and forth. So you guys want to try that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Here we go. Kill the King. We'll be right back. Okay, so now you can hear why I look up to Rocco if you heard what he just played in Kill the King. And it was a complete pleasure and an honor to be able to trade solos like that with you. So thank you for playing that. I'm going to give you a round of applause.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, it was an honor for me as well to play with you.
Thank you. This was awesome. Yeah, man. So another thing I want to talk about is another area of your career that I think Danny's going to have a lot of questions about. Mm. You're also...
Wait. What are you talking about?
You're also an adult film star.
We weren't going to mention
not
that.
Not bring that up.
Oh, I mean, sorry. You, aside from being an amazing lead guitar player and touring with Bumblefoot and being the head repair guy at Mandolin Brothers on occasion, you're also Ace Frehley's guitar tech, right?
Correct.
Now, okay, Danny, go.
I have a mask. I didn't bring it. I was going to bring it because I wore an Ace Frehley mask the last time.
We have to,
I got to tell you, it might be something I do every day. Every day Ace.
All right.
Where I forgot everything.
Every day
my
Ace.
Keys, my car, combination to my locker.
Were you a Kiss fan as a kid, Rocco?
I was, yes. Absolutely.
So how did you get hooked up with Ace?
Well, my buddy Phil.
You lost the bet.
That's basically what happened.
He lost the bet.
My buddy Phil gave my number to Anthony Esposito, who was Ace's bass player at the time. He needed a tech, and this was back in 2008. And I got the call, asked if I was interested in doing it. And I said, yeah, sure. And it was kind of funny because the first time I went to meet Ace was up at his house in upstate New York. And I'm driving up there, and it's really in like these... like the hills and deep woods and stuff like that. So I don't know where the fuck I was going. So I pulled up to his house, at least I thought it was his house, and I'm pulling into the driveway, and it's kind of like this winding thing. So I see Ace, and, you know, I never met Ace in my life ever. So my tongue basically went numb, and I was like, "Hi, Dave, I'm back." Yeah, I didn't know what the hell to say. You know, so I seen him and I said, "Hey Ace, I'm Rocco. I'm your new tech." And Ace is sober. He's been sober and clean for many years now. And when I went to meet him, he was sober as well. But like I said, if you don't know Ace is very lanky and very I can't explain it, but very very like laid back the way he speaks, almost like he was drunk. And we did our thing, and he showed me his stuff, and I brought it back to the shop. And first thing I did the next day was I called Anthony. I said, "Hey, man, you said Ace was sober, right?" "I just want to make sure." And he's like, "Yeah, absolutely." It's like, "Oh, okay." He's like, "Oh, no, that's just Ace." Yeah. I said, "Oh, okay, cool." So... as time went along, I realized, okay, it's just the way Ace is, it's the way he walks, and he's just very calm and cool and mellow. He's a good guy.
Now, you said Ace was one of your influences when you were a kid, right?
Yes.
When did you start playing guitar?
Well, I started playing in 81, but I started playing bass first. And, I remember my friend Kevin, he was playing guitar, and we started hanging out, and he said, "Hey, let's do a band, play bass." And I was like, "All right, Now, at the time, I had already been playing a lot of air guitar to like my AC/DC records and my Rush records, and I probably was about 9 years old, and I probably was like one of the only kids my age listening to rock. Everybody was listening to like disco and Saturday Night Fever and all that.
No punk?
Not much, no.
Well, because you live on Staten Island.
Well, right. Well, that's what it was.
Everybody thought they were John Travolta.
Right. So, yeah, so I started playing bass, and then...
Were you taking lessons for bass?
I was. I was taking lessons off my singer in my tribute band, Made in New York, Rob.
Oh
yeah, because my friend Kevin, his next door neighbor was Rob, and he had like a little studio in his house, and you know, he had a band, and I was, we were just like, oh my God, this is awesome. Yeah. So yeah, so I started playing bass, and he was teaching me, and I just remember one day my sister's friend came up to the house, and she had Blizzard of Oz, and I was like, cool, let's throw it on the turntable and see what we got. And I just heard the beginning of I Don't Know, and that was, I called my friend Kevin. I said, hey, listen, man, I'm not playing bass anymore. Just let you know. Let's just do a switcheroo, and you know, and that's what we did. He switched to bass, and I played guitar.
Did you take lessons at that point on guitar? Or?
I did. I was still taking lessons from Rob, but wasn't very long. After a while, I just kind of started learning on my own. And
so Rob was your only teacher that you ever had.
That's it. I took like one or two lessons from Kenny Dubbin.
Okay.
From Prophet.
Yeah.
And
great guitar player.
Yeah, awesome. Him, Dave DiPietro, they were like the Jersey guys. And
Ted Poley.
Wasn't he
the drummer?
Yeah, Ted Poley. Ted Poley was the one of the original drummers in Prophet, mm-hmm. and turned singer. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so those guys.
I played with Ted for a few years.
Yeah, I know.
They were really influential and. But that's about it.
What I'm curious about is,
And I learned a lot of Ron too, just from being in bands with him, because I played with him for so long.
Because I'm curious, for a guy who hasn't had much formal instruction, you have impeccable technique. Now, where does that come from? Like, how do you? Because most of the time, when I'm teaching, I see a guy pick up a guitar and I go, "No, you got to do it this way. You're gonna have pain. You're not gonna be able to get the sounds out." Like, because that's something that is very tricky to figure out on your own. You know what I mean? Like, where do you think you got that from?
I think I just heard it from my influences, and then just watching videos and trying my best to emulate or imitate them as best I could. Not, and most times not very successful doing it, but you know, I have to say, you know, over the, I don't know, how long has YouTube been out now?
10 years.
10 years or something like that. You know, since YouTube's been around too, the things that you learned that you thought were right, you kind of watch on YouTube now and you're like, oh, I never did that right.
Did you hear that thing that Hetfield said? They recently toured, I think, doing Ride the Lightning, okay. The whole thing. And he said that he hadn't played that album in 20-something years. Mm. So he went to go play it, and he said he couldn't remember anything. So he went on YouTube and watched some kid, his tutorial video. He said he learned how to play his songs from some kid. He goes, because he's playing, he's like, oh, that's not right. And he looked on YouTube, he goes, oh, that's right. and then the person who said that, I think it was on another podcast, and the person who was interviewing him said, you should have made a comment like, hey, James here, thanks, kid. Because that would have made the kid's day. That kid would have won YouTube
day
or something. Yeah, he would never say that.
Yeah.
Ever.
But
that's a big thing now, though. Like, most of my students, before I even attempt to teach them something, they're like, oh, yeah, I just went online and I looked up a tutorial on it. I'm like, you can get anything. Like, and they show you exactly how and where to play things.
But you know what? I get a lot of drum students, too. And there's a lot of stuff on there that's just plain... wrong.
Oh, it's like the tabs. Yeah. It's like the kids will come and they'll print out tabs. Be like, I learned the tabs of the song, and it's all wrong, kid. You got to double check. You got to use your
ears. They'll come in and say, oh, I learned a song on drums. This guy on YouTube did it, and he did it wrong.
Assume that, yeah. Like, oh, well, if it's on the internet, it's got to be true.
That's why I never play anything right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Andy.
Every week. Yeah, so it's dangerous.
Well, you know what it was?
Back
in the day when I had to learn a song, I mean, there wasn't any YouTube. There wasn't any cassette players that slowed to half speed or, you know, programs. I mean, it wasn't anything like that, you know. And
it was just Ron. Ron, what is this? Ron,
exactly. well, you know what, though? But it was amazing to watch him play when we were like 18 because, you know, this guy was doing like Randy note for note and Eddie note for note and playing Bach with his feet. I'm not kidding you. I mean, like it was, you know, we'd be at a party and, you know, you see Ron put a acoustic on the floor and he's doing some classical piece with his toe and his hand. And Like, what the hell is this guy doing?
When he, yeah. I asked him to come on the show, and he said he will when his album's close to be finished, so we can help him promote that.
I was there yesterday, and I urged him.
Oh, good, good. Did you tell him to have fun?
Oh yeah, yeah. And I sent him the link too, and he loved it.
But the other thing, I know when he comes down here, we're gonna do no music, and it's just gonna be a goof off fest, and we're gonna talk about pizza or sushi or something like that for 4 hours, because that's what would happen.
I don't know nowadays. Maybe not. I mean, he's eating like nuts and berries.
Yeah, he's very
he's like
trim
a fucking
now.
Squirrel now.
But I just remember I could never. I always tried to get guitar stuff from him. Now I learned, I'd say 90% of what I know about this, about recording, from Ron.
Yeah, yeah.
And whenever I would ask him guitar stuff, he would change the subject. I think the reason was not that he was being a dick. I think he sort of I by the time a lot of people go to Ron because he was a teacher at my dad's store, and a lot of people would go to him when they were just starting out, and he would give them the tools. But I kind of already had an identity, and I was doing a lot of blues, and he didn't want to remove that.
Yes,
that's what I, because every time I'd ask him, he was like, he goes, here's how you mic up a tom. I'm like, okay, but how do I play fast? He's just like,
oh my god.
But you know, I. You know, I think what I learned, the skills I learned from him, are way more valuable than if I just learned how to shred from him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, you record great, though. I mean, clearly.
It's all, you know. I mean, I appreciate that, but it's mostly, I mean, I learned a lot of stuff in college. But
I'm sorry, I learned a lot of recording stuff from him, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm not like a great engineer or anything like that, but for all the home stuff I do, I mean, he pretty much was the Cubase handbook for mm-hmm. me. You know, every time I had a question, he'd either let me help me either in person or on the phone or whatever the case is. So
I had Cubase first because of Ron. Ron told me to get Cubase.
Right. I think he still uses Cubase. Yeah.
He
right?
still uses Nuendo. Cubase too.
He uses Nuendo 2.2.
Listen, man.
Don't poke fun, man.
I'm still using Cubase like 1. I'm so behind.
You can record 8 tracks at the same time.
I could. Well, so what's wrong with that? Nothing wrong with that.
And a max of 8 tracks.
Right. Oh, well, of course.
I gotta hook you guys up because I recently signed an endorsement with Steinberg.
Really?
Yeah, for
interesting.
Real.
Very nice.
I'll hook you guys up.
When I went to college, they told me, learn Pro Tools, stop with this Cubase business, because they were approaching it from the fact that if you're going to go into a commercial studio and you're going to say, hey, where's Cubase, they're going to kick you out. That's a point. You know, I loved my time with Cubase.
Well, aren't those both like staples in the industry now? I mean, isn't like Pro Tools
Nuendo is more of a post-production program now. That's used more for film. I mean, but you still see Pro Tools predominantly. Okay. But the thing is, Nuendo has sort of superior surround sound mixing. Okay. And for example, like the guy Elliot Shiner, who mixes all those surround sound albums, like the Eagles' Hell Freezes Over and stuff like that, he'll mix on Nuendo. The Queen Night of the Opera surround sound was mixed by Elliot Shiner in Nuendo. Yeah. And that's just to, you know, because it's very easy to mix in 5.1 with that.
What's that guy, Zimmer?
Hans Zimmer?
Yeah, he uses Nuendo.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Richie's eyes just got crazy eyes. You guys missed it. He goes, Zimmer?
I'm Batman. Sorry. Anyway,
Richie listens to the Batman soundtrack all the time.
I do.
This is no exaggeration. He listens to it in the car. He listens to it when he's in the car by himself. He listens to it in the car with his wife. He listens to it by himself on a plane. He listens to it on a train. Yeah, you guys get the point.
Every weekend, IFC is playing the original episodes.
Yeah.
I watch him every weekend on my home.
We've seen them recently.
They're very, very stupid, and I love them.
Original, what original?
The original Batman 60s.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Isn't that hard to get through?
It really is, and it makes me realize that I haven't advanced mentally at all. Because I still want to question get something what you're out of it.
Yeah. They're wonderful, but they're also terrible. They're
not very realistic. I'm going to go on a limb and say that.
Yeah.
He went to the William Shatner School of Speaking.
Yeah. But like I love when they climb the walls.
And then it's like you had the three big ones from that class. You had Christopher Walken. He went one way. You had Adam West. And then you had
I just listened to an interview with Burt Ward, who's Robin. And he told some awesome, because Adam West is like such a gentleman nowadays, but he told some awesome stories about how Adam West would fuck with everybody on the set nonstop. Like, if he knew like another actor was uncomfortable, he would keep bungling his lines so they had to do the scene over and over again. He'd do stuff like that. It was hilarious.
Well, like Mayor Adam West.
Oh, yeah. I want to ask Rocco a few more questions. I want to wrangle us back to music for a second. I'm sorry, guys. So do you know, are you trained in like theory and stuff like that? Or did you ever learn any of that stuff?
No, I never had any formal training in theory, but my buddy Mark went to GIT in California.
Right.
And every time he came back, we would always jam, and he got into the theory, and I guess he technically taught me theory, because that's what we did. We would jam and have jams for hours, and I'd watch him play chords and things. I mean, this was like when I was like 20 mm-hmm. or so, and so I got a lot of theory off of him. And then he, what's the word I'm looking for? He introduced me to bands that I never heard of. One of them being Jellyfish.
And we're going to get to that in a second.
Yeah.
So, like, for example, we just played Kill the King. When you play it, you definitely can tell you know what you're playing. This is an odd question, and I apologize for putting you on the spot with this one, but I'm always curious to ask people this. When you're playing a lead over something like that and improvising, mm-hmm. What's going through your head? Are you just thinking, because I know a lot of people think patterns. Are you thinking about the chords? Are you thinking about the scales? Like what goes through your head in a situation like that?
I try to focus on what's going on rhythmically as best I can. But I always feel that sometimes when you get caught up in the shred thing, at least for me, my mind kind of loses focus on what's going on, and I tend to like start spacing out, and sometimes it doesn't even make sense to me. But over the years, I've tried to just think more rhythmically and try to keep within the confines of what's going on.
That's funny you say that, because that's exactly where I'm at right now. I'm stopping. I was so all about chords and scales for a while that I feel like I let my rhythm slack a little bit. So now I've been like dialing things way back when I practice, and I'm with the metronome, and I'm just trying to, nail the metronome all the time. And and because you're right, when you practice these sequences with your fingers sort of just fly off, and sometimes you could just lose track of where you are, and something that turns into a great lick just completely dive bombs your lead.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Like, the whole less is more theory kind of works. I mean, I know we're talking about shredding,
but still, like, if it's not in time, it's not good.
Yeah, it's not. It just sounds like you're just kind of doing a flurry. And Kill the King, I mean, Richie kind of goes on that rip.
There's a difference, though. There's a difference for doing that stylistically as a choice, or when you fuck up. You know what I mean? Like, right, and if you can make that distinction, like when you, like, Eddie Van Halen does it sometimes. He'll just, do a little flurry or something, and it's not supposed to be, and it's just a thing. It's for effect. But when Eddie wants to nail the pocket, he does it.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's something.
But even his fuck ups sound good.
When I saw Van Halen at Madison Square Garden, I walked away with is, whenever that guy touches the guitar, something cool happens. It's
absolutely. Well, Eddie and Randy definitely were my biggest influences.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So they, I always kind of look back to what they did and what they accomplished, and try to incorporate it somehow into my style of playing.
But here's another thing I want to stress, and this is like a peeve of mine. When someone tells me this guy is faster than that guy, I say, okay, that guy has better technical ability, but if you're playing a song, there's only so many rhythmic divisions you're going to play. If the fastest you can listen to on a song is, say, 16th note triplets, mm-hmm. and a guy's playing faster than that, he's playing out of time.
Well,
that's
I remember being young, and like, 13, 14, crashing all my friends' metal band rehearsals and stuff. And it's like, I remember being told, you always gotta have the guy who can play really fast, and then you have the guy who plays, like, you know, all the melodic stuff, like the classically trained guy. So, like, oh, really? That's a thing? And, you know, I didn't know any better.
That's like a Squiscar and Toki. That's what that is.
You have, like, your super thrashy guy who's just, like, mashing his fingers anywhere, just like, like in no discernible time at all, and then you know the guy doing like the sweet leads.
Yeah, I've never been into the real just, you know, out of control, fast. It just never did anything for me. I mean, you know, maybe some people may look at Yngwie as being like that kind of player, but he's not. I mean, he knows everything he's doing, and everything is placed perfectly.
Right.
You know, for that kind of thing. I mean,
right. I mean, the luxury that and a lot of people who just learn that style. Here's the problem with that. I love Yngwie. I love his music. But you got to understand something when you're going down that shred path. Yngwie writes songs based around the licks he's going to play. And absolutely. If you're at a gig and you have to play a Taylor Swift song, don't be surprised when those licks don't work over it.
Absolutely. No,
so
totally,
that's
totally.
That's the thing that I stress to a lot of my when I was teaching, I stress to my students, like, you got to understand these guys, like even like Eric Johnson, you know, these are guys that are writing songs to accommodate the lick they want to shove in there. You know what I mean? So you take that, and when you find a song that's in a tempo that allows you to do an Yngwie lick or a Steve Vai lick, awesome. But most of the time, you still have to listen to Eric Clapton.
Right, right, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's only so much harmonic minor can get you places, so yeah, kind of got to expand.
You know, now, we're going to take a 180 right now, and because I'm painting a very incomplete picture of Rocco right now. I'm showing Rocco as this complete shredhead, and it's just not true. Because Rocco is also really into one of my favorite bands, and we touched on this on our second podcast. He's into Jellyfish. So I just think that speaks to how well-rounded you are, because a lot of people who are into the style...
You mean physically?
There you go again. But thank you, Dennis.
Thank you.
But
I'm here all night. Try the veal.
I mean, like, for example, I'm sitting here with my friend Danny Miranda, who turned me on to Black Sabbath and Dio and Judas Priest. And whenever I'm in the car with him, he only listens to the fucking Lilith Fair.
Joni Mitchell is the original heavy metal.
So I always find it interesting.
She taught Tony Iommi those alternate tuning.
Tony.
Yeah, he just didn't have an acoustic guitar, so played it on the S.
That's totally a Joni Mitchell. He ripped it off.
I heard in reverse.
So he's not telling the truth, Danny.
No, I do listen to Cuban music.
Rocco's looking at me like, is that true?
No.
Kind of is.
I heard Joni Mitchell like was really the reason why Tony Iommi got his fingers cut off. Snipped his fingers. Oh, that's
fucked up.
I don't know if that's true or not, but
not happened in a factory.
She held a knife to his throat.
She said, "You're gonna play it my way." You see, just took him right off.
Made him an offer he couldn't refuse.
Absolutely.
So it's just always interesting to me when you find people who are like really badass, you know, metal or hard rock guys, and then they're really passionate about something that's completely opposite, you know, because it just shows me that person is open-minded and well-rounded. Speaking of well-rounded, I, you know, like me, for example, I like Yngwie and all stuff, but I also like Katy Perry. So, and that just shows.
Katy Perry for a while.
What?
About Katy Perry for a while.
Because Anne-Marie won't allow it.
Yeah, Lilith Fair came first.
I know that. But you really like Jellyfish.
I love Jellyfish.
And you motherfucker, you picked one of the hardest songs for us to play today.
You did.
You know, I when you asked me to pick two songs, I was already on my like a Rainbow kick. I just kind of like revisited Rainbow again and you know, and I love Ronnie James Dio. And honestly, that was probably more the reason why I wanted to do it more than anything, because I just his singing on that is amazing.
Oh yeah,
it's he's the guy. You just know, like
and Emery did an amazing job singing. Oh, yeah. So that was really a lot of fun.
Just the thing, like we talked about Eddie Van Halen before. I feel like Eddie is the guy who took the hard rock and the even the metal and made it soulful. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel about listening to Dio sing. It's like a lot of guys like, whoa! But you know, he never goes to that really cheese place. It's always it's always the blues. Like he's singing the blues all the time.
Yeah. It's what was amazing about him is how he just had this ferocious voice and then had this angelic voice when he needed to sing like that.
Yeah, I don't know how he kept his voice in working order for as long as he did, because it's like
singing
that song just now. I'm like, I have nothing after that.
I guess towards the later part of his life, you know, when he was playing with Sabbath again, or Heaven and Hell, whatever you want to call it, you know, they were tuning down.
Yep.
But it wasn't like a bad thing. You know, you go,
no,
you see some bands.
He still had the aggression. Yeah, he still, as an older dude, had that same aggression.
The songs may not have been in the original key, but it's still, he sang so great, it didn't even make a difference.
It was still righteous.
Yeah.
Totally.
Like, I heard, I don't know if it's true.
There you go. That was the song I was going to mention.
I heard, I don't know if it's true, I heard his favorite singer was... I heard that his favorite singer was Stevie Wonder. That actually would make sense.
Okay. Sure.
What?
That Ronnie Dio's favorite singer was Stevie Wonder.
That makes sense. Makes a lot of sense.
So
I heard him say that, yeah.
When did you get into Jellyfish, being into Dio and all this stuff? Like, how did that happen?
Well, like I said, my buddy Mark came back from California. He was going to GIT, so he's going back and forth. And he was getting into all these... different bands that were not anything that grew up listening to, Jellyfish being one of them. And when he was, Jellyfish is from the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And when he was out there, they were, I guess, just making their rounds and, you know, coming on the scene. And, you know, they were very different. And unfortunately, I think that back then, that might have been one of the things that kind of killed them, that they were just too...
They were so not grunge. That was the problem.
Yeah, this video is so... They were hippies more than grunge.
Yeah.
This video is really
psychedelic
trippy.
Thing. And, but anyway, so he gave me a copy of Belly Button. And that's just where it all started. I was just immediately hooked. And I started listening to the Beatles, which I didn't listen to when I was younger because I was just... flooded with Priest and Maiden and Sabbath and AC/DC and you know, so like I wasn't gonna listen to the Beatles, I wanna hold your hand, get the fuck out of here. You know. But I started listening to Jellyfish first and I said, Mark, these guys are amazing. He's like, well you should listen to the Beatles too, because that's where they pull a lot of their influence from.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, you know, just don't tell anybody about it. So I started listening to the Beatles, and I didn't go from the early years on. I think I started with like Sgt. Pepper's, which is probably the best record I could have started with.
Yeah.
And you know, and I heard it right away.
Beatles, Beach Boys, and Queen. That's what I'm hearing.
Absolutely.
That band.
Right.
That's how I explain them to people.
And I had already been listening to Queen too. So although in my opinion. I don't think you really hear the Queen influences as much on Belly Button as you do on Spilt Milk.
Spilt Milk, it's really there.
Yeah.
Like
well,
that.
Spilt Milk opens with Hush, right?
Yep.
Well, there you go.
Hush, right. You know, Hush into joining a fan club.
Oh, my God.
Which, just to let you know, that would have been the song I would have picked had you not done it already on your podcast.
Well, your buddy Frankie picked that for
you. I know. Well, you know, I'm going to say...
Hey, Frankie, where the fuck are you, by the way?
That's right.
Muff doesn't believe Frankie's a real person. No, because Muff, who's usually here, my co-host, he thinks that I just made up the name Frankie Italiano because he thinks it's a made up name so I could say I wanted to do a Jellyfish song and he said I made up that name like it's a fake request.
Oh,
but I wanted to bring him here so he'd say it's a real person.
Yeah, that's his real name, and you know, Frankie's awesome. Yeah.
Well, we miss
him. He loves your podcast too.
But we're super happy that Danny could fill in because Danny is a badass.
Awesome.
Awesome. We're going to do The King Is Half Undressed because Rocco doesn't like us. And,
is this a Band Geek Conquers?
This is a Band Geek Conquers. If Dennis, if you can give me a dun, 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 and it's going to be FGA, guys. Here we go.
Remember the last time we tried this?
I did. And the words are Band Geek Conquers,
well,
Danny.
I'm not wearing the mask this time.
Oh, yeah, that's why you went.
He sometimes does it. 1, 2, 3, 4.
That was awesome. Okay.
Nice.
So, there's a harpsichord in there.
We're going to conquer the middle part of King Is Half Undressed with the vocals. Okay, Anne-Marie, what part do you sing there?
During the ooze?
Yeah, the ooze. That's the hard part. We got to conquer
all right,
that.
So I have. Ooh, 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 ah.
Now, if you didn't think those guys were geniuses before we played that, now you know.
That's one part. And that's one of many.
That's just one part.
I'm just sending my apologies again for this. I really didn't know what was
going
on.
I want to know who the dealer is.
I'm going to add my part to yours now, Anne-Marie. Ready?
You want me to sing mine again?
Yep. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
Ooh, ooh.
That's really cool. Wow. All right, Rocco, you want to try to add your part to this?
Good Lord, no. That's, oh boy.
It's your idea, dude.
It's your idea, yeah.
Yeah, but I thought you guys were just going to like overdub me and stuff like that. I was like, hey, what you can
we
do
don't
me?
Do that at Band Geek.
Right.
Oh, everything is completely live.
Everything's live.
You want to try it? Want to try to jump in this?
I'll try it.
All right. Don't worry. We'll take a we'll stop after this and rehearse this 30 times before we actually do it. All right. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Good. Let's take it from. That's good. Let's stop. All right. Now let's bring Danny in. You ready, Danny?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Ooh, 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 ah.
All right, nice. All right,
we'll try the song.
Yeah, let's try the song.
So I'm sorry. Sorry again about that.
We'll get it.
I said I like jellyfish. I didn't say I could play jellyfish.
All right, we're going to do the song now. I'm hoping that you hear the first take, but you're probably going to hear the 20th take. So good luck, guys, and I'll see you on the other side. Here we go. Ready, guys?
Nice. Yeah.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Less, it's still-
I'm going home after that.
Yeah, fuck that.
I don't have it in me anymore. My brain's fried.
Let's call this a day. Let's end this. That's a good place to end this. I want to thank our special guest Rocco Monteroso.
Thank you for
playing amazingly and really challenging the band geeks today. Thank you, Rocco, and
thank you for having me.
I want to thank Dennis Lieflang for saving us at the last minute.
Thank you.
Can I blow up your spot for a second?
Blow my spot?
Yeah. Dennis sent me a text. Why couldn't Rocco pick a Ozzy song or a Maiden song?
Yeah, because Frankie was going to do this with us. So it would have been Rocco, me, and Frankie, which is like almost all of the Maiden tribute band we had. So I figured we'd be doing Maiden.
True.
That didn't happen.
That's right. We'll get Frankie on again at some point. I also want to thank Danny Miranda for coming down 2 hours in traffic from Long Island.
Danny Daisley.
Thank you.
That sounds... See, he didn't pay me any compliments. Lilith Fair.
Everything's a Lilith
Danny,
Fair, Richie,
Katie
now.
Perry,
Danny,
mother,
hold on.
Mother,
seriously, I love you, and I'm glad... And I cherish the times I spent with you making music, so thank you for being
we
here.
We went down to the Jersey Shore.
You've told the story 6 times on this podcast, but go ahead.
To see Leroy.
Oh, okay, cool.
And... So let me show you what I'm really into, you know? And then he's like this. And he goes, please, put something on with drums. You know? He goes, you know, I put on Crosby, Stills, and Nash or something. He goes, nice. I'm trying to drive you.
Are you such a nice person, Richie?
Yeah, I am. I'm the greatest.
Well, I was an honor playing with Danny. I could actually say I played with somebody from Queen.
And Meatloaf.
And Meatloaf.
That's right.
That fucking rocks.
Thank you. So thank you, Danny, for being here. On vocals and piano today, or harpsichord, I should say, my wife Anne-Marie Castellano.
Yeah.
I gotta thank Andy and Brandy for coming down because we had a lot of trouble with our cameras and they just crashed because Andy's gig, he got out of his gig and he came right here. And Andy and Brandy, they saved our ass today. Thank you very much for coming.
Last week's episode, so I needed to come.
That's right.
I know, we missed you.
We did miss you guys.
Not as much as you missed me.
Aw. And I'm Richie Castellano. Thanks for listening to Band Geek. See you next time.
Yeah. Woo!